Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Welcome back, Overnight America. For the next couple of hours, we're here until 2 o'clock, and I'm looking forward to spending that time with you. Aw. Here's the number, 436-7900. You can call or text that line. Also, 800-925-1120. What if I told you at one point the United States government, through the CIA, purchased the entire world's supply of LSD in order to allow one of their agents, Sidney Gottlieb, to test it in order to see if we can weaponize LSD in order to gain mind control capabilities? You would say that sounds like a crazy, crazy thing, right? Well, it actually happened. And Stephen Kinzer has a book out where he documents the United States' effort to try to use LSD this way. It's an incredible story. He's going to join us here in about 10 minutes from now. Before we do that, let me go to John in Alton. What's going on, John?
Yeah, you know, you were talking about the different radio personalities from Wex, and you kept mentioning Jack Buck. But, yeah, John Carney, who was the first million-dollar radio personality in the country. I mean, he literally, because he was a radio personality on KMOX, and his shows, if you've ever heard them, and I know they're in the archives, you need to listen to those. He also had...
I'm pretty sure you said John. You meant Jack, though.
Or Jack Carney,
right.
Yeah,
and Jack's shows were tremendous. I have something saved from him. He was incredibly witty, fast on his feet type of guy. He was incredible.
Well, he also had shows on. Mm-hmm. You know, he actually did his own little show. He wrote his own little shows.
Yeah.
That were funny. And then people look forward to that, listening to him. And then they look forward to listening to Bob Hardy late at night. They farted. Don Miller, who was the traffic guy, you know, he'd get up in that helicopter, and I remember several times listening to him, he'd say, well, I'm flying over 44, and, man, there's people getting into a fight out here. Man, look at the fist car. I mean, and so...
Bob Hardy,
You have to... I believe that a lot of radio has been homogenized, and you have to make it fun. You literally do. You can't get into the political, bubbles and stuff. You just have to make it fun. And that's what Bob Hyland used to say. You know, radio is to be fun. And, you know, in Jack would interview, like, Red Skelton, and he'd interview a bunch of different entertainers and stuff that were on radio and things. But we've gotten away from... people that they would describe things like you were talking about the old radio. They would literally describe, you know, well, it was a windy night, and you know, do murder mysteries and stuff. KMOX does. They still have Johnny Rabbit comes on, and I like listening to Johnny Rabbit shows. But after that, they have When Radio Was and stuff, and they have the different old radio programs. Those were entertainment, and people look forward to that entertainment because they get to use their imagination. Today, it's all political and boom, boom, you know, and people are getting over. It's just too much. They, you know, it's too much advertisement, too much, different bubble, political bubble and stuff.
Yeah.
We have to start making a little more fun, and hopefully, maybe you'll take some of that advice and just try to make your radio program a little more fun.
I need how much more percentage? Should I do 10% more fun?
Folks,
Should I do like 20% more fun? Like if you had to like crank up the volume, like how many notches more fun do you think?
Well, you know, it's you have to start looking into different, you know, read different comic books. I mean, Tim Allen, if you've ever read his book, his couple books, I mean, his last name was Dick, Tim Dick. And he writes about, you know, how he was made fun of and stuff. But there are things in life that even you have gone through that are actually funny now, you know, and you need to kind of like make fun of yourself and make fun of the different things around us. I mean, prime example, St. Louis, they just had, they gave away a whole bunch of smartphones to a bunch of kids in high school. Hopefully they'll become smart from them.
You know? So you want that type of stand-up that would probably get tomatoes thrown at me if I were to do that at a club.
Who cares? You know, who cares?
Yeah, I know.
Who literally cares?
Right. Okay, well, yeah, I'm glad, John, you called in. Hey, thank you for that. It makes me want to go listen back to some more Jack Carney. You got me really itching for that. Hey, thank you very much. Good to hear from you. You know, I feel like I do a lot of that stuff already. I make fun of myself. I do a lot of observational things. I do that all the time. All right. Let me get to Rich in South Bend. Hey, Rich.
Ryan. Mm-hmm. This is going to be one weird, super weird weekend for me.
Ooh, I like where this is going. Okay, Rich, what are you doing this weekend?
Well, the Cubs are losing to San Diego 4-0. And it looks like, and it'll be the Brewers and the Cubs will be tied for the second wild card.
Mm-hmm.
This weekend, the Cardinals are playing Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to root for the Cardinals.
Yes, Rich, you're doing it. You're doing the right thing. You won't regret it.
No, that's because I want to get rid of the Brewers. My cats are going to look at me, and they're going to start searching for a for one of those jackets that your hands are tied behind
what,
your
like
back.
A straight jacket? No.
Straight jacket.
Don't worry about it, Rich. You're going to become a fan from here on out. This is what's going to happen next. You're all of a sudden going to be a Cardinals fan because of this weekend.
No.
Oh, yeah. You're doing it. I'm sorry. This is how it starts. There's no way around it. You might as well buy a jersey right now.
No.
Yeah. What's the first jersey? I would recommend a Molina would be very nice. Probably be a good fit on you.
I got a Rizzo and a Baez jersey.
Okay. It doesn't mean you can't get a Gibson on top of that.
No.
You're going to be
and you wouldn't
full
believe,
fan.
You wouldn't believe what they want for jerseys these days.
How much?
I bought mine at a retail store in the mall. $110 each.
Those Cub jerseys, they up the price on you. They know Cubs fans will pay that. You don't have to pay that much down here in St. Louis. You get them in bulk. There's so many fans down here. You get to save the price. It's the Walmart philosophy. All right, Rich. Thank you, and I'm glad you're going to be a Cardinals fan. So how about you report back and let me know how many different Cardinals hats you buy after this weekend. Oh, and Cubs just lost, as it turns out. Game over.
Yeah.
Sorry, Rich.
But come on, Rockies. Take three straight.
All right. Thanks, Rich. Have a great weekend.
Sure. Bye.
Ooh, the new Cardinals fan, Rich in South Bend, Indiana. I'm so happy he's going to be converting. Isn't it nice? That red's going to look really good on you. It'll look real good on you. Yeah. Oh, yeah, Red Rich. That's what they're going to start calling him after this weekend. Whew, looking good, Rich. Don't look back. Don't. Stephen Kinzer is an author. He has a book out, Poisoner in Chief. In fact, there was someone that worked for the CIA going back to the 1950s when they purchased all of the world supply of LSD, and he did these tests to see if we can use it for mind control. An unbelievable story, which... he's the only one telling it because the man named Sidney Gottlieb was practically a ghost hidden by the government for many, many years. He'll tell that story next on Overnight America KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
The new book out called Poisoner in Chief, Sidney Gottlieb and the CIA Search for Mind Control. Author Stephen Kinzer, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Good to be with you.
What a fascinating topic. You find that some of these secretive programs inside the U.S. government, even decades later, it's hard to find information on them. I wanted to know, really, the story behind this, Poisoner in Chief. How come no one knows who Sidney Gottlieb is before this book?
I feel like I just wrote a biography of a person who didn't exist.
Hmm.
That's how invisible he was. I now think I've discovered the guy who might have been the most powerful unknown American of the 20th century. Sidney Gottlieb was a secret figure even within the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
But we now know, and this is the story of the book, that he directed what amounted to history's most systematic search for techniques of mind control.
Mm.
He was the guy hired by the CIA to find out if it was possible to program people's minds, to come up with a truth theorem or an amnesiac or a way to make people kill and then forget they had done it. And he spent years essentially in conducting experiments that destroyed people's minds and bodies in the search for something that in the end, he confessed, actually turned out not to be possible, which is this mind control idea that he got from movies and books.
Wow. And even in the 1960s, they can credit the big movement to LSD in the youth rebellion to some of the experimentations and the things he was doing.
It's really a remarkable piece of Gottlieb's work. So not only did he conduct horrific drug experiments on prisoners abroad and in American prisons, but he also had another side of his LSD research. So this CIA chief chemist, Sidney Gottlieb, was the first acid visionary. He was fascinated with LSD. In 1953, after he'd been at the CIA for 2 years, he got the CIA to spend $240,000 to buy the world's entire supply of LSD. Besides using it in these grotesque prison experiments, he also started through a couple of bogus foundations that he set up to let hospitals and clinics know that if they were interested in making some money, they could conduct experiments in which they would ask for volunteers to come in and take LSD so that their reactions could be monitored and recorded.
Yeah.
So without the knowledge of the people running these experiments who thought they were funded by foundations and didn't know the CIA was involved, lots of young people began taking LSD thanks to the CIA. And among them were people like Ken Kesey, who went on to write that book, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Allen Ginsberg, the radical poet, members of the Grateful Dead. Only decades later did they realize that their LSD came from the CIA and came from this one guy, Sidney Gottlieb. So the irony, of course, is that the drug that Gottlieb thought would help the CIA control America and the world wound up fueling a youth rebellion that was aimed at destroying everything the CIA defended and loved.
Poisoner in Chief is the name of the new book, Sidney Gottlieb and the CIA Search for Mind Control, and author Stephen Kinzer joining us. And when you think about the Grateful Dead and some of these artists that use this, you think of it like, oh, it's rock and roll, or oh, it's art, and you know, that was their thing. It was just, you know, considered another drug that they took. But it's a little bit more cynical. Some of the different experiments that he did around the world, I mean, we're talking about electrocution. In some cases, even some of the subjects could have died, and this is all under the umbrella of the CIA. So it's interesting that the CIA would be endorsing this extreme person that's out there doing some really extreme testing.
You're right. Sidney Gottlieb had what amounts to a license to kill from the U.S. government, and I don't think there were very many other people out there that did. So why was he doing these terrible experiments, including some on which he worked with partners who had been Nazi doctors in concentration camps?
Oh, wow.
It was for this reason. So Gottlieb's assignment was find a way to take a control of a person's mind. he decided, this is actually a two-part process. Before you can implant a new mind into somebody's brain, you have to destroy the mind that's in there. So he spent years trying to find ways to destroy people's minds most effectively. And some of this was done with LSD. Mm-hmm. He oversaw one experiment at a prison in Kentucky in which seven African-American inmates were isolated and given what the prison doctor called double, triple, and quadruple doses of LSD every day for 77 days.
Oh, man.
With the aim of trying to find out if you could destroy a person's mind like that. And actually, of course, the answer is yes. So at the very end of his 10 years of doing this, Gottlieb finally concluded you can destroy a person's mind with enough drugs and electroshock and sensory deprivation. But it's actually a myth that you can implant a new mind in that resulting void. So I guess all of the things I did over 10 years really just didn't work out for anything, and never mind.
Wow. So he was working in the CIA up until the 1970s. And I was fascinated to learn that he did other things with the CIA. It wasn't just learning about mind control. He was also coming up with gadgets and things in the background, like James Bond spy gadgets.
Yeah, so he started out as the chief chemist at the CIA, which a position he held for years. And during the 50s and early 60s, he was running this mind control project. Then he transitioned into another phase where he was working for something that the CIA called the Health Alteration Committee, which was essentially their assassination bureau.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was Gottlieb who made all the poison pills and powders that were supposed to kill Fidel Castro. It was Gottlieb who got President Eisenhower's order that the Prime Minister of the Congo, Patrice Lumumba, should be assassinated in 1960. And Gottlieb not only created a poison kit to carry out that assassination, but he carried it, hand carried it from Washington to the Congo and handed it to the CIA station chief there, which definitely makes him the only American ever to carry government-issued poison from one country to another with the aim of killing that country's leader.
Wow.
So he became the poisoner-in-chief, which is how I got the title of my book.
Yeah.
But then, as you say, in the last years of his career, he was promoted again, and he became the head of what they call the technical services staff, which makes all those gizmos, all the spy gadgets, so the miniature cameras that you hide in your tie clip, and he made everything from a rubber boat to an escape kit concealed in a rectal suppository.
Ugh.
So his imagination ran wild, and the fact that he took LSD more than 200 times by his own account maybe accounted for some of that.
Wow. You know, when you start to research a topic like this, a man that many people believe didn't exist because, you know, there's no record. There's so many things destroyed by the time he left the CIA. He got rid of everything. So how do you even research someone that's considered a ghost?
Really, this is the great challenge of this book. How do you find out about the life of a person who really wasn't there? Actually, there are a lot of pieces once you start weaving them together. And it's not only the story of how he became essentially the most prolific American torturer of his generation, but the other side of his life. So outside of work, Sidney Gottlieb was a very spiritual and compassionate person. He lived in an eco cabin in the woods without any running water. He milked his goats before dawn in the morning, and he grew his own vegetables. He meditated. He studied Buddhism. So that gives a kind of Jekyll and Hyde aspect to his persona that I think really gives a center to this book and raises a lot of questions about what can go on inside a human mind.
What a crazy story of a man that many people have no idea existed, and that's by design. His name is Sidney Gottlieb, and he worked for the CIA trying to research mind control in the 60s and 70s and used LSD, and oh, what a crazy, crazy story. Stephen Kinzer has discovered and writes in his book that's out now called Poisoner in Chief. We'll continue our conversation with him next on Overnight America KMOX. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Overnight America. We're talking to author Stephen Kinzer, a best-selling author that has a new book out called Poisoner in Chief. Sidney Gottlieb is the subject of this book. He's someone that worked for the CIA for a couple of decades, did a lot of different things, but most notably did the MKUltra project, where he bought all of the world's supply of LSD and then experimented to try to see if the United States can weaponize mind control. Crazy, crazy story. Author Stephen Kinzer continues with us. And I look at some of the photos you have inside the book. Very difficult, I'm assuming, to find photos, too. But he almost looks like a Hollywood actor. He's a handsome guy. I'm sure he's very convincing. He walks into a room. I'm sure it's not hard for him to try to tell the CIA, I need this, and it would be easy for him to convince them to get it for him.
You're right. So I was the first person to get a photo of Gottlieb. I asked the CIA, can we get a picture of what he looked like when he worked for the CIA? Because no such photo had ever been made public. And they did release one to me. But I'll tell you an interesting footnote to that story. So I was excited about getting the first picture ever of Gottlieb at work. And I told my publishers, we have to put this picture on the cover because it's such a big deal. And they loved the idea. But then a couple of days later, they called back and they said, you know, we've thought more about it. Now we don't like the idea anymore. And the reason is nobody knows who this guy is. Nobody's ever heard of him. So actually, they decided to put kind of a dark, sinister silhouette on the cover. And I just put the photo of him inside in the photo insert because it shows what an anonymous person he was. And definitely researching this book has given me, as it will give the reader, a sense of questioning how much secrecy can there be out there if there could be a guy like Sidney Gottlieb carrying out these horrific experiments with the full endorsement of the United States government and even leading to people being killed in unknown numbers. Could there be others like that? Were there then? Are they now? Are there now? How far does the secret realm go? So you don't have to be a real conspiracy theorist to read a story of someone like this and start asking yourself some very far-fetched questions.
Wow, no, that's true. A Poisoner in Chief is the name of the book, and author Stephen Kinzer joining us. Just came out. Awesome, awesome book. You know, I listened to a podcast where it was Alex Jones on with, I forgot who it was, but either way, he was talking about some of these secret programs, and they were using LSD to try to talk to parallel universes and things like that. And it's funny because when books come out like this, all of a sudden people look at the Alex Joneses of the world and say, wow, they're probably onto something because this was kept a secret for so long, and he's been out there talking about things like this. When you start reading things that seem truly unbelievable, you can't believe the United States government was a part of something like this. Was there anything in there that absolutely did shock you when you learned about some of the things of Stephen Gottlieb?
Yes. So this is my 10th book, and I'm always looking for stories that show the reality behind the facade of public politics and public diplomacy. I've been surprised by a lot of things I found, but I've never really been shocked until I wrote this book. This book actually shocked me. The idea that we essentially built a mind control program on a fantasy that we thought the communists had figured out ways to program minds, so we would go out and do it. And then the fact that we would hire Nazi doctors to tell us how to start the project. And then the fact that we were in a political environment that we were told was such that the United States was under total threat every single moment and we could be wiped away at any second, and therefore anything was justified. The loss of a few lives or even a few hundred lives would be considered nothing compared to this enormous threat that we thought we faced. So Cold War historians now will tell you, of course, that was all fantasized, that we never were under that threat. But we were made to think that we were. And that also is a message for today. There's no better justification for committing immoral acts than being deeply committed to a cause. And one of the most transcendent causes is patriotism. So after you get caught up in that, you I think get into a situation like Sidney Gottlieb, which is that you stop asking yourself, is there a limit to the amount of evil you can do in a good cause before the evil starts to outweigh the good?
Wow. That's interesting. You know, when I look at some of the other parts of this book, and I understand that the United States government does hide a lot of things, I'm wondering how many other documents, like you mentioned, have been destroyed and how many other secret things have been destroyed. And sometimes it just seems too good to be possible. It's just too much like science fiction, but it's amazing how sometimes you find those stories that seem to pop out like this. I'm wondering if there's anything that came out after the book, something you learned about him that you weren't able to get in there.
Actually, I've started to get a few emails now since the book has come out. I got one from a person who told me that he and his wife had spent a lovely weekend with Sidney Gottlieb and found them. This was when they were retired, found them to be the most model citizen. But there was always something troubling about him. People who knew him in his later years said that he obviously was consumed by some kind of guilt or regret. He wouldn't speak about it ever. And his wife even made the kids swear that they would never speak about him again. Nonetheless, anybody who believed in final judgment or karmic payback would have to be very troubled to look back on a life like Sidney Gottlieb's.
Wow. Wait, his kids knew what he was doing?
You know, one of the great breakthroughs in my book was that I found a woman now in her 60s who had been the girlfriend when she was 16 of one of Gottlieb's sons. So she had been at the house, and so she had a sort of a view of Gottlieb as an ordinary father that nobody else had recorded before. Mm-hmm. And she told me this amazing story. She said, one day I was over at the house, and it was just the two of us, me and my boyfriend, Gottlieb's son. Mm-hmm. And my boyfriend motions me to come into the library, the study. And then he says, turn around. And then the girl said to me, he did something. I didn't see what he did. And then he told me I could turn around again. And the bookshelf was opening up, and there was a whole display of weapons in there.
Oh, man.
And I said, what? Why is that there? And he said, well, my father is a dangerous person. And I said, is he in the mafia? And he said, no, he's in the CIA. He kills people.
Wow.
So that was the 16-year-old son. She then told me, I think all the kids and the wife must have known more or less what he was doing. But later on, I found somebody who said that his children, then adults, didn't want to speak to him ever again. Unfortunately, they are all keeping their word to their mother that they won't speak about their father. So I wasn't able to persuade any of them to talk. But I think I got enough around the family to give you a sense of what a strange and unusual character Sidney Gottlieb was.
Yeah, with the program MK Ultra, which I first thought was a beer, because it's kind of a weird coincidence, I guess. Because when I see MK Ultra, I think Michelob Ultra or something like that. Where did he retire? Like, what city did he live the rest of his life in?
So after Gottlieb left the CIA, he was actually still in his mid-50s. He was a young guy. He couldn't actually just take another normal job. I mean, after you've been the poisoner-in-chief and the CIA chemist and the maker of spy devices, you can't just look in the want ads. anyway, not only that, but he and his wife were both very spiritual people, and they decided they wanted to go out on a kind of a charity life journey, and they sold their little cabin. They got on a tramp steamer. They went off to Australia, Africa. They were working at a hospital for leprosy patients in India in the summer of 1975. Maybe Gottlieb was playing out some of his guilt when they got a cable from the CIA saying, essentially, we have bad news for you. Somebody in Washington has figured out that you exist, and you're going to be called to testify in front of a Senate committee.
Oh, wow.
So he had to come back. He testified in private. They allowed him to do it under a pseudonym and in a private room. And they've never really got to the heart of his mystery because they didn't know enough to ask him any questions.
Oh, wow.
Later on, he settled back in Virginia. He died in 1999 at the age of 80. And it's an interesting thing that I discovered while working on this book. So when he died, finally, a couple of lawsuits that had been working their way through the courts for decades, filed by victims or on behalf of victims who had been part of one of the experiments he ran, were about to come to trial.
Oh.
And I found two people involved in those cases who were working on them day and night who told me, both of them independently, I'm sure Gottlieb killed himself.
Wow.
Because he realized that he could be the instrument by which this entire project could be made public. He'd have to testify in public and could be the way the whole thing could be brought down and inestimable damage could be done to the CIA. So we'll never know, I don't think. But that's another tantalizing aspect of a life of somebody who knew more about poisons than anybody in America and probably anybody in the world, and would be a master at creating a poison for anybody, including himself, such that no autopsy would ever be able to detect it.
Wow. Poisoner in Chief is the name of the book, author Stephen Kinzer. Where can you find the book now?
I always advise your local independent bookstore, but if you're not able to get there, it's on Amazon and selling well. So just click on there and enjoy it. Or yeah. Enjoy might not be the right word. It's a scary story. But one thing I put at the end is everything in this book is true, but not everything that's true is in this book. There's so much more out there, and I invite the reader to participate by imagining the stuff that could have been in the cases of documents that Gottlieb destroyed when he was on his way out of the CIA.
It's a blue cover with the silhouette of Sidney Gottlieb on there. In the CIA Search for Mind Control, Poisoner in Chief is the name of the book, and author Stephen Kinzer. Thank you so much for joining us and talking about your book on KMOX.
It was a great evening. Thank you.
And he joins us on the Quiver River Electric KMOX guest line. Wow. Wow. What else can you say after learning that? It's Overnight America KMOX.
It's Mark Reardon for Zero Res Carpet Cleaning. It seems like all the kids do during the summer is drag dirt into the house, right? Well, they stink it up, too. The good news is the kids are back in school, and fortunately, there is Zero Res. Zero Res, the healthy way to...
Tomorrow's going to be an interesting show, too. We have a couple of live interviews because it's the third Democratic debate, this time down in Texas. We'll have our friends Rich Rubino and Kristen Arnold both joining us live after the debate. So it ends at 10 o'clock Central Time. At least that's what time it's scheduled to end. They've been ending pretty close, if not right on, or I think they're one night they actually ended a little bit early. But, hey, what a coincidence. We start at 10 o'clock tomorrow night, so perfect timing. Rich Rubino and also Kristen Arnold. And then we have another special guest. He's someone that's been in the news as of late. His name is Ryan Glesman. He is the brother-in-law of Pete Buttigieg. Now, he's the one that has been quoted quite frequently online and also been on the different news talk circuit. He was just on Tucker Carlson last night. He's the one that had some comments as a Christian and as a pastor of a church regarding Pete Buttigieg's, you know, God's cool with abortion stance lately, which is really strange. So he's going to come on and talk about that. So that's going to be tomorrow night, too. And I don't know if Pete Buttigieg is going to be bringing it up during the debates tomorrow. But if it is, it'll be very timely, I guess. You know, it's funny. I'm listening or I'm looking online to some of the text messages that are coming in. And you can text into the show at 436-7900 or 800-925-1120. And Rich called in earlier and said it was $120 to go buy like a Rizzo or something, Cardinals jersey, not a Cubs jersey. And I said, no, come down to good old St. Louis. You can get them in bulk here, much cheaper. There's many more Cardinals fans, so that keeps the price down. We have that philosophy down here, right? You strength in numbers. So when you get down here, you don't pay $120 for a Cardinals jersey. I guess you could, but I have no idea. But what happens is that a person texted in and said, they know Cubs fans will pay that. Yeah, that's true. They know what they can get out of a Chicago Cubs fan. I have a couple of Cardinals jerseys. In fact, I bought one for my son. Me and my son both have a Molina jersey that we wear to the ballpark whenever we go to a game. Our little matching jerseys. Aw. Today was September 11th, and we had a couple of different ceremonies, including one that was in New York City. Donald Trump, our president of the United States, went and said a few words.
For every American to live through that day, the September 11th attack, is seared into our soul. It was a day filled with shock, horror, sorrow, and righteous fury.
Everyone was mad. That's the one thing I remember the day of. I was more mad than I was confused. And of course, there was a lot of confusion. What's going to happen? And I was pretty young. I didn't really realize, truthfully, what could happen. You know, now that I'm older and with a little bit more experience, I have an idea what some of the responses will be. But anymore, back then, I had no idea. And I think a lot of other people were in the same boat as me. One more from President Trump.
To each of you, the First Lady and I are united with you in grief. We come here in the knowledge that we cannot erase the pain or reverse the evil of that dark and wretched day.
Reverse the evil. Rudy Giuliani, who was mayor of New York City at the time, really showed his leadership qualities at that point. He was a tremendous leader. And he was on WCBS, which is in New York, talking about that day.
It's hard to say. Think about different things. It's almost like stream of consciousness. There are so many memories. I was just thinking now about where I was at this time period when the first building is about to come down. I was on the phone with the White House trying to get President Bush, and all of a sudden the phone went out. The building was shaking, and I didn't know what it was. And of course, it was the first tower coming down. It had hit our building, and we were trapped. And I just think about how close to death we all were.
Wow. Isn't that remarkable? Think about how close to death we all were. That's in New York City. If you lived there at that time, it's probably something that no one else would understand unless you were there. A lot of people like to go back and listen to the broadcast of what the radio shows were doing at that point. And that was one of the first things I did. My radio program I used to listen to when I was growing up in Detroit. First thing I said when I went online, hey, can I listen to that broadcast date? And lo and behold, it turns out that's the most requested audio from that show. Same thing with Howard Stern. You know, everyone goes back and they like to listen to Howard Stern doing his show in New York City. What happened in real time? And you know what's pretty remarkable? You can actually go online. Maybe I'll post a link if I can find it. But there's websites that document if you were just watching the television at that point, here's all the major networks in real time, what they broadcasted. And it's pretty remarkable. I'm glad all of those things have been preserved for history's sake. Another hour of Overnight America coming up, and we can take some more calls, too. We'll open up the phone lines on KMOX.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh, oh.